This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. If you think the criminal justice system is biased, should you be barred from sitting on a jury? That was the thrust of a question before the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court today in the case of a juror who was dismissed after saying that she believes the criminal justice system is rigged against African-American males. Joining us on the line to talk about this is Judge Nancy Gertner, retired federal judge and senior lecturer at Harvard Law School. She's also WBUR's legal analyst, and she wrote an amicus brief in this case. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
So let's give a little bit of background here. After searching an apartment in Brockton, police found cocaine, and they charged Quinton Williams, an African-American man, with possession with intent to distribute. Now, during jury selection for Williams' trial, a prospective juror was asked if she might have bias. And she said yes, because she worked with low-income youth, including teenagers convicted of drug crimes. And she also said she does think that the criminal justice system is unfair to young black males. The prosecutor asked that she be excused. The judge dismissed her for cause. So what's wrong with that?
Well, think about it this way. If she had said, for example, that I believe that the criminal justice system is always fair and that the outcome is always correct, we would not have recused her, even though that's not true. We would not have disqualified her, even though that's not true. And so, to some degree, this is a statement that is a general statement, which actually is also true. That is to say that the criminal justice system is unfair to African-American young men. The problem was there was another question that the judge should have asked, which is, having that in mind, having that in your view, would you be able to be fair in this case? In other words, one can have a general view of the criminal justice system, but nevertheless say, this is what I would do in a particular case. We do that in the death penalty setting all the time. What's your opinion about the death penalty? Well, I am generally opposed. Well, do you think that you could impose it if the facts require it? Yes. That second question is the bias question, because that is saying this set of ideas would be an impediment to my being fair in this case. But general views about the criminal justice system on either side should be in a different category.
So what basically would you say are the guidelines for determining potential bias in a potential juror or the fitness of a juror? I mean, it can, you know, people can have all kinds of opinions, and I would assume that you would want a variety of opinions among a jury pool. So what do you, as a judge, what guides you to make these decisions about juror fitness?
Well, the issue was, everybody has opinions, right? You don't have
right.
A jury. That's why you want them. You want lay opinions and you want diverse opinions on a jury. So the issue is, are the opinions that you hold, will that be an impediment to your evaluating the evidence in this case? In other words, are you going to say, I therefore will never convict? Or I therefore will always convict? Or with respect to the death penalty, I will always impose it or I will never impose it. So the issue is whether these ideas are an impediment to your looking at the Commonwealth's case and the individual individually. And so this general statement shouldn't have qualified.
Now, the prosecution said that this juror gave contradictory answers, right? Saying she did think that she could put aside her bias, but also saying, or she did not think that she could put aside her bias, but then saying that, yes, she could be impartial. I mean, what's wrong with saying, you know what, we want a juror to not equivocate here. We want a juror to be able to say clearly, I have this opinion, but in this case, that would not affect the outcome of my decision as a juror.
That is a great question. The only problem is that it only works in one direction, which is that if she said, you know, I think the drug laws are fabulous and should be rigorously enforced, and then said in the second sentence, you know, but I can be fair, the odds are she would be on the jury. So this is someone who did the opposite, who said, I have these concerns about the criminal justice system, but I can be fair. Frankly, and now she's off. Frankly, the I can be fair statement, in 9 times out of 10, judges will use as sufficient to get someone on the jury. You use the juror's own view of whether or not they can be fair, particularly, I might add, a juror who has been honest, as this one has. Usually, as I said, the question, do you think you can set aside those views about the pretrial publicity, about, you know, your view about the criminal justice system in general, do you think you can set them aside and be fair in this particular case? 9 times out of 10, we accept that. And so it should give one pause that it wasn't accepted in this case.
How do you think that the ruling in this case is going to affect jury selection going forward?
Well, I mean, I think that it really enables, I would hope that it would enable a more searching questioning of jurors. In other words, the intonation about, you know, I like the criminal justice system, I don't, that should never be enough on either side. The problem is that we have in Massachusetts, and on the federal side in particular, we have a very perfunctory voir dire. So, you know, the it seems to me that this case raises questions of how far the questioning should go, how much more nuanced the questioning should be. Otherwise, we are just, you know, accepting general state here, disqualifying someone because of general statements, or, as I said, oftentimes, most times, qualifying them because of their own view of whether they can be fair. I'd love to see a more searching voir dire, more searching questioning.
Let's switch gears here because we can't let you go without talking about the Senate confirmation hearings for Supreme Court
nominees. What Senate confirmation
hearings? I know. Did you hear about that little story that's like taking?
Right.
It's grabbing all the headlines for forever, it seems. You wrote an op-ed about this in the Boston Globe. And as a federal judge, I'm just curious, your initial thoughts, initial headline of your own about these Kavanaugh hearings.
Well, I what I wrote was that I actually heard the Kavanaugh statement, rather as opposed to seeing him initially on television, and I told the cab driver, I was in a cab, and I told him to change the station, that he wasn't on the confirmation hearing at all, but that I thought that he was, we were listening to a talk show host. The affect of the judge, the things he said, the way he said it, the attacks mentioning, you know, Democrats, the Clintons, and left-wing sources of funds were extraordinary to me, and that alone it seemed to me to be disqualifying, because the standard for a judge is not just are you actually biased, right, but the standard is do you convey the appearance of impartiality? Is there something you're doing or saying that reasonable people might consider to be partial? And it seems to me these statements certainly raise the question about anyone would reasonably believe he would be impartial in cases involving A, Democrats, B, the Clintons, C, right, left-wing groups. And it seems to me that that raises a serious question.
But, you know, I think his supporters, just to play devil's advocate here, I think his supporters would say, you know, Judge Kavanaugh is really angry. His reputation is destroyed. Let's face it. His reputation is destroyed regardless of whether he gets on the Supreme Court right now. So this will always be part of Brett Kavanaugh's history. His youthful drinking will always be out there for people to examine. He's really been made kind of a laughingstock. So, I mean, he's angry. Is that so bad, I guess?
Well, I think that if he had said that this process is punishing, that my reputation has been destroyed, that we should think about better ways of selecting judges that don't require these kinds of costs, that would have been different. But that's not what he said. He attacked. He attacked the Democrats, the Clintons, left-wingers. That's so, yes, you could certainly talk about that. That is true. That is a true conversation we should have. But he went much further than that, you know, and some might say sort of exposing the partisan, the deep partisan. The fact that he was able to say that and thought that that was appropriate to say gives me pause. And should give everyone pause.
Some folks say, though, that this is too much focus on his temperament, and there's not really been any focus on his judicial record, which might be more relevant because this was sort of like a job interview for how he will be as a justice.
Well, there was a focus on his judicial record up until now, but the judicial record was basically endorsed by the Senate. In other words, the judicial record, which had been the focus before, which is a record which is, in my view, just analogous to Judge Bork's record. Bork, as you know, was famously rejected, right, many years ago. In my view, Judge Kavanaugh is almost as far outside of the judicial mainstream as was Judge Bork. Now, we're not talking about that because the Senate was poised to confirm him even on those facts. Likewise, there's not a lot of discussion about whether he was dissembling in his comments to the committee, again, because we got past that. So if this conversation has supplanted that, it's really only because the Senate was poised to confirm him, notwithstanding issues about his record and notwithstanding issues about his representations before the committee.
And just very briefly, what do you think all of this, the spectacle of all of this and the way that the conversations have gone, what does this do to the judiciary in general?
Well, I think, I mean, it pains me to think about what this does. The judiciary in general is one thing, but particularly for the Supreme Court. I mean, I would imagine if we were a fly on the wall of the Supreme Court now, they would all be tremendously discomfited by this, and particularly if he is confirmed, right? Imagine that. Friday he's confirmed, Monday he takes the oath of office, and on Tuesday, you know, and on Monday he starts hearing a Democratic challenge to Republican gerrymandering. How uncomfortable will we all feel when that decision comes out 5-4 and he's the fifth vote? Will we feel like justice has been done? That's the Supreme Court that concerns me more than anything.
All right. Judge Nancy Gertner, retired federal judge, senior lecturer at Harvard Law School and WBUR's legal analyst. Thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker, and this is Radio Boston.